Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:55. That is Pacific Standard Time, and today is Friday, December 23rd. And as my daughter has been telling me all morning, that it is Christmas Eve Eve. And Merry Christmas to one and all who are listening to this audio. And it is a rather interesting time of year because we are entering this sort of period of time, which is rather quiet, and certainly the markets today were quiet, so there's not much to report in the very short term. The majority of markets were pretty much unchanged. The Italian index was perhaps the one that was up the most. Perhaps I should just pull up that page from Bloomberg, and we can see very clearly that there was a pretty quiet performance, that the Dow and the S&P and the Nasdaq were all pretty much unchanged. It was the Italian index, the FTSE MIB, that was up just over 1%. Of course, there are very large questions there about what exactly is it that the ECB, or the European Commission, in fact, are going to decide on the bailout that is being implemented for the Italian banking sector in the order of in at least 10 billion euro. That's rather a lot of money, even in today's rather debased currency, when we consider just how large these things are, these bailouts have been. It is mind-boggling, but we've been inured to the size of these bailouts. The bigger question is to what extent that is breaking the rules, and we can anticipate that they're going to fudge the rules. The only logical course of action is nationalization, that they're simply going to nationalize these banks. We have seen ample evidence of that already in Germany. There are only two banks that are still listed, and those are Commerzbank and Deutsche Bank. And for the largest economy in Europe, the fact that you have only got two banks that are in public hands is a rather startling revelation, I suspect, for many people, and yet it has been that case for quite some time. All of the Landesbanks are no longer listed. So Italy has got a large number of listed banks, and I think an easy prediction is that it is going to have fewer listed banks in future. That, I think, is the way of the way that the Europeans are handling their issues. When I was in London, I was speaking with an Italian friend who was very pro euro and very pro the UK remaining within the EU. And considering the rather ambivalent position that I personally have towards the state of governance within the EU, it is interesting to for him to say that it is, in fact, despite all evidence to the contrary, he believes that it is Europe is championing capitalism. But that isn't, in fact, the case. You cannot simply equate austerity with capitalism. Rather, it is crony capitalism, because what is, in fact, happening is that the massive debts that were incurred by lenders are being imposed upon the entire populations of countries, despite it is the fact that it is a small number of people made some incredibly bad decisions about taking on those debts in the first place, or indeed entering the euro in the first place. And yet it is the populations of those countries that are bearing the full brunt of the cost of repaying them. And therefore, is it any wonder that we're getting a rise in the populism overall? And that's something that isn't simply about, and I use that term overall very deliberately, because it is certainly not in the EU, just in the EU, or indeed in the UK, but we're getting populism rising everywhere, and we can see that that is something that we're going to have to come to terms with over not just this week, or this month, or this year, but over the next few years. And this isn't, I guess, this is also something that is going to really come to bear on what kind of things are going to do well in terms of investments. populism is in many respects about giving the people what they want. What the people want more than anything else is a steady source of income, a job which gives them a sense of self-worth and rising standards of living over a period of time. And there are significant people groups of people right across North America and Europe and increasingly in China that have not been able to avail of those ambitions. So there is going to be increased spending, there are going to be tax cuts, there's going to be anything to try and impose the Laffer curve to reduce the impact of government in order to let loose economic potential. When we look at the 3-month government bond yield in the USA, it has been trending lower for a very long time. It was pretty much close to zero for a prolonged period, and that is no longer the case. That is a sea change overall. We haven't seen anything like this in really quite some time. Previously, no one had ever even considered that interest rates could go to zero, let alone stay close to zero for such a very long time. And because they lasted for such a long time, then there is a strong temptation to extrapolate the trend. And it is something that we talk about at the chart seminar. It is how do people predict? And generally speaking, people predict what they see. When a market has been going sideways for a long time, then you will ask them, what do you think is going to happen next? And they'll say, well, I think it's, the upper side of the range is where there is resistance, the lower side of the range is where there is support, and I think that the range will persist. When something has been trending higher or lower for a prolonged period, then people also tend to extrapolate the trend. And certainly, what we had in the debt markets, most particularly, was this belief that we were in a new normal, that this time really is different. And I think, where have we ever heard that before? That there is no possibility that interest rates will be able to rise, that the discount rate is going to remain at rock bottom levels indefinitely, and that is the justification that can be used to employ a great deal of leverage to get long and leveraged, to stay long and leveraged, and to buy the dips. And that is rapidly changing. We have had, and I deliberately put up this 50-year chart of the bond, the 3-month bond, for just very simple terms, because it shows how inert it was. But we have had a substantial move overall, and this has been a very big move in terms of the percentage advance. But it has not been a big move in terms of the absolute number. It is only 0.5%. But it is, you can still see that bond yields are not running ahead of the Fed. There is no expectation at present that 3-month yields are going to be higher in 3 months' time. So they're not anticipating that the Fed is going to be raising rates in a hurry. When we look at 12-month yields, then we're presented with a pretty similar story. 12-month yields are at 85 basis points, which is pricing in right now just one additional hike and maybe a second one between now and late December of 2017. So even though we have had a big move in the bond markets, then there is still no real belief in terms of what investors are pricing in, that there is going to be a runaway inflation. And that is despite the fact that we have had a sea change in terms of investor sentiment. The very large move that we have had, and most particularly in the banking sector, where the early part of the year was really very weak, and then we get support coming in late January, early February, and the market had been ranging higher in a reasonably consistent manner for most of the year, but it exploded higher in November. And that was betting that inflation is going to pick up, and that it is going to pick up, and that is going to be beneficial for banks because interest rates will rise and they'll be able to make money on the on money market funds. They'll be able to make a greater margin on the loans that they issue. That because of the administration that is coming in, that there will be deregulation, that corporate taxes might come back down, and they could even become competitive and among the most competitive of any developed market. And for the world's largest economy, still by a long shot, that could have profound consequences overall. So the banking sector has taken off. The fact that commodity prices are in recovery mode would suggest that inflation may indeed be getting legs. If that is indeed the case, then the bond market is still, despite the fact that we've had this very large move, it is still complacent. It is not pricing in additional inflation. And why would it? This has been an environment where if you are 50 years old and you are still a bond trader, and there are obviously very few of those because the average age of a trader at a bulge bracket bank is 27. Well, even if you have survived that long, then the chances are that you started your career in 1980 and it has been a 35-year bull market. And now we are really perhaps just at the end of that. Even on this arithmetic chart, and I think it is also useful to look at it in terms of the algorithmic, the logarithmic chart, we can see that there's a loss of momentum, that there have been some quite profound moves since 2010, that yields were at 4% and they went to 1%, and they went back up to over 3%. And all the way back down to a new low of, in July of this year. There is a pretty consistent progression of lower rally highs, and more important than that is that that progression of lower rally highs is still intact. What we could say is that there has been a loss of momentum over the last 4 years, and that this could potentially be base formation and a development overall. Now, question then is whether it is going to be a type 3 bottom or a type 2 bottom. It's already not a type 1 bottom. We had the acceleration lower, we've had the rebound, we are potentially getting right-hand extension. If it turns into a type 3 bottom, then yields will range between 1 and 3% for the lengthy medium term. If we get this market breaking out, then even if the yield goes to 3%, that will still only be threatening the progression of lower rally highs. Yields have to not only go above 3%, they have to sustain that move. They have to go above 3% and then find support somewhere above it. And that would be something that would break the downtrend. And considering how large the moves are, that's rather a big ask. There are other things we simply have to look at if we're going to make that determination. And the 10-year total return chart for futures is on treasuries has had a very large move already. It is deeply oversold. Now, the very large question is whether it is going to encounter resistance in the region of the trend mean. The trend mean has already turned down. It is turning down quite steeply because of the very swift decline that we've had, and the fact that prices had already been declining. It is quite different from the shape of the move that we had back in 2013 with the taper tantrum. And part of the reason for that, of course, is that the yield or the total return would be going sideways. It had a failed upside break in 2013 and then pulled back. That had allowed the trend mean to smoothen out. the total return had been declining all the way from July and then accelerated lower. There was a very clear, massive reaction against the prevailing trend. And this is quite clearly a type 2 top. The question now is going to be to what extent we're going to get right-hand extension. Are we going to get a first step below this top and then will it break lower? We got a first step below this particular top, but then the discount rate was not rising. So bond yields had another 3-year up leg. And of course, because this is a 35-year bull market, it is not going to end with a whimper. It is not going to end overnight. The topping out process could take years. And I think that that is something that we do absolutely have to keep in mind, that yes, we have had a very large move, and there has been a very big change in how people are really viewing the market, and the Fed is beginning to raise interest rates. There was a statistic today that consumer sentiment in the US this week is the highest in 11 years. And 11 years ago in 2005, things were pretty ebullient. So the potential for what has been a very impressive bull market on Wall Street already to become overheated, I think then is perhaps the base case at this stage. When we look at the S&P 500 over the last 10 years, then its low in early 2009 was at 666. It is currently trading at 2261. So that is a substantial move already. We can ask very simply, is this still a consistent trend on the upside? And we can only answer that by saying that the most consistent part of the trend was between 20, late 2012 and early 2015. And then we moved into a larger reaction overall. And that reaction, if we look at it, is went from 2,100 and a quarter down to 1,800. So we're talking about 225 points. And the one back in 2011 went from 1,370 down to 1,060. So it was 300 points. So in fact, the pullback that we have had for just about all of 2015 was an equal size reaction relative to the bigger pullback that we saw in 2011. And that is still if we look at the very broad trend overall, we could have to then conclude that a reaction of greater than 225 points would be required to really question this trend overall. Now, of course, that would also assume that the when ranges are resolved on the upside, then the breakouts are also powerful. We have had powerful breakouts, we have had very powerful trending phases, and this has been a powerful breakout. The market did break out, and now it is rallying higher. It is rallying higher because people are pricing in the potential that corporate tax rates are going to come down, and US corporations, despite some very notable exceptions, the majority of US corporations pay a great deal of tax. So then that could not only help to improve the bottom line, but it would offer an avenue for some of that money to be brought back. But in order for that money to be brought back from overseas, then there's going to have to be some form of incentive. It isn't just corporate taxes. The workaround that a number of corporations have been employing is that they've been issuing local currency debt overseas. Then they take the proceeds from that debt and repatriate it to the US. You won't pay tax on proceeds of debt, you only pay tax on profits. They use the profits then to pay down the debt so that the money doesn't have to move. But of course, the money has moved. And with that kind of successful workaround, quite apart from the various musical chairs in terms of domiciling profits between the Netherlands and Ireland and the Cayman Islands and other places, then very large corporations will need quite an incentive to re-bring that money back to the US. And that remains an open question. When we look at what how much money is outstanding on margins, on margin accounts on Wall Street, it is at pretty close to all-time highs. And this chart won't be updated again until the end of the month, and it comes with a 1 month lag. So it might be a while before we see the full ramifications of the presidential election. It has lost momentum over the last few years. So what we can only conclude is that it is badly in need of a new catalyst to shove it higher. And we may have seen that catalyst already, considering the breakout that we've seen on stock markets. And therefore, yes, the debit balances on margin accounts is close to an all-time high, and it might yet go higher. And considering just how much money there is still sloshing around out there, there is the potential for that to occur. And when we look at US corporate profits, we're presented with a pretty similar trend overall. Now, this is only updated once a quarter, but we get a very broadly similar pattern with peaks in corporate profits in the mid to late 90s in 2007, and then we had another peak 2 years ago, but it is now testing the high once more. Corporate profits will take off if taxes come down and we get deregulation, not just in the financial sector but elsewhere as well. And that is, also from a very high level overall. And therefore, what we have to conclude is that I'm going to talk about this in a moment. When we look at the S&P 500, then we have to consider that yes, this was a lengthier and a bigger pullback, but we are now getting a clear resolution on the upside, and that this is still a big bull market. But valuations are increasing, so corporate profits will absolutely have to increase if, and the way that I am looking at that is, I've created a chart on Bloomberg for the PE ratio. So the historic PE on the S&P 500 is at 21, and that is still trending higher. Corporate profits will absolutely have to break out if we're not going to move into really rather bubbly territory overall. Now, certainly that is potentially the case. If we have had a very large move over the last 10 years, and we look at this over the last 50 years, then big bull markets follow very lengthy trading phases. That ranging is an explosion waiting to happen. We got the explosion in 2012, and that explosion has had its first larger, lengthier consolidation, and now we are resolving on the upside. When we look at these very long bull markets over time, then what we can see is that we get very big bull markets, and then we get lengthy trade ranging phases. We get very big bull markets and lengthy ranging phases, and it is certainly looking increasingly likely that we are in another one of those very big bull markets. And within the course of a big bull market, valuations will get overcooked. We get a pullback, then you get some consolidation overall. You do not get valuations coming back down to where they were in 2008 and 2009. Those were troubled valuations. The fact that most people were not able to avail of them because of inertia due to fear is quite beside the point. We did have almost record low valuations on a substantial number of assets in 2008, but most people were ill positioned to be able to avail of them. It's unlikely we're going to see those valuations reached anytime soon. What is perhaps more likely is that we will go through very consistent trending phases, and then we will get somewhat lengthier pullbacks. And in the course of what is potentially a 20-year bull market, there will be a number of recessions as well. Now, when we look at when is the next recession likely to be, then we should probably look at the yield curve. And government bond yields are still really very low, but and what we have certainly seen since the presidential election is that the yield curve has got steeper. So I'm creating the spread between the two. And I'm just waiting for that chart to load. While I'm waiting for that chart to load, before I started talking, I pulled this overlay chart of Japan's Nikkei 225 and US Treasury yields up, because there was a very clear correlation between the decline in the Nikkei and the decline in government bond yields for a prolonged period of time, and that really did end in 2012. Now, what people are beginning to talk about in terms of Wall Street is that we're moving into an earnings-led bull market, whereas previously the bull market had depended very much on monetary policy and stimulus, that the next leg of the bull market will depend on earnings growth. We've already looked at the chart for corporate profits, so your margins are already quite wide, that profits are close to record highs. What needs to now happen is that inflation picks up so that corporations get pricing power back, that they are able to invest so that they can further increase their productivity. And how productivity is measured is, I think, very much a movable feast. But what we are perhaps seeing with this breakdown in the correlation between the Nikkei and US Treasuries is that Japan is certainly trying something different. They are now the largest holders of US Treasuries because China has been spending yuan to try and support the currency that they have been allowing their holdings of treasuries to decrease. And Japan has now retaken the lead position as owner of US treasuries. But the fact is that the Nikkei is reflecting the devaluation of the currency. It isn't, we are in a very different environment overall. When we look at what has been happening in the yen over the last 5 years, then the big moves that we have had have correlated with these declines in the currency. And currencies are becoming just the playthings of central banks. And that is something that has really changed in terms of how investors can participate with markets. Because certainly Japan embarking on quantitative easing and outright devaluation of the currency opened the door to other countries to do the same. And the devaluation of the euro that occurred at the beginning of last year is just one more example. And we are perhaps now in another process of devaluation of the euro. It is currently trading at 104 and a half. That is below the 105 level, it is oversold in the short term. There is potential for some steadying, but there has been a distinct absence of clear upward dynamics. And when we look at the chart over the last 7 weeks, then it doesn't take an expert chart reader to identify that the vast majority of the big candles are the red ones over the last 6 weeks, that there is pronounced selling pressure, that every time we get any kind of rally, that it is hit and hit hard. And there is a good argument why Europe needs to have a weaker currency, but perhaps more importantly, it is that Europe needs to abandon not just its commitment to imposing further and additional austerity, but rather that if the European project is going to be saved, and that is important, that the ideals on which the European Economic Community were founded are really very laudable ideals. To bring an end to war on continental Europe is something that we should all support. However, imposing austerity on literally tens of millions of people, it was not part of that agreement to begin with. What Europe needs is fiscal stimulus, and if the rising tide of populism is going to be tempered, then people need to have hope that they can have a chance at improving their living standards overall, and that is something that they just have not been able to do. So if Europe can muster the wherewithal to in fact deliver on fiscal stimulus, then that should be very beneficial for their stock market. And what I've tended to look at is the velocity of money, because the velocity of money has been trending lower for a long time already. It peaked in 1997, and it has been trending lower, and particularly since 2010, and really since 2008, I guess, with the credit crisis, that the velocity of money has been going down. The disintermediation, which was so widely touted by advocates of the internet back in the late 1990s, has come to pass. And that's also a clear indication that bull markets thrive on making promises. And often those promises do in fact come true, that the internet really has changed the world. The railways really did change the transportation landscape. The way that the Japanese are managing their companies has been co-opted and then forgotten by the majority of global companies. Innovations really do change the world, and yet the reality is that we have big bull and bear markets around those very large changes. There was a news story in the New York Times today, where they were saying that the long-term jobs killer is not China, it's automation. Well, that is true, and it's also false. What, of course, we have seen throughout history is that old jobs disappear and new jobs rise up to replace them. If you were running an inn on the stagecoach line, then you went out of business. If you're running a hotel on the side of the railway line, then you probably prospered. So, we are definitely getting that same kind of transition in in markets now. And that is something that I think is going to remain the case, that we are going to get massive disruption, and that the only way that we are going to get around that is training. That the global population is going to have to become progressively more educated, that people are going to have to be upskilled and upskilled in a dynamic fashion, that our way of educating people is going to have to change, that there is, and I cast my mind back to when I was in school, and some of my best friends were not academic, and they were skipping school, they were going out and running around the place, they had exuberant teenage male energy and really didn't settle down and go off and get proper training until they were in their late teens or early 20s, which of course meant that they had no real prospect of going to university. And I think that there is the reality that there are a significant number of people to which the very conventional schooling environment is not appropriate. And that doesn't mean that they should be confined to a life without hope of improving their circumstances, but rather that they should have the ability to be educated in a different way. Because we're going to need those people to be educated. We're going to need everybody to play their part if we're going to raise aggregate production. It is in raising aggregate production that we raise living standards, and that is, of course, one of the things on which capitalism is based. That capitalism really works when capital is put to work, and when it is productive, then it contributes to rising living standards, not just for the holders of capital, but because capital can be built upon by the borrowers as well. And with this velocity of money that has been trending lower for so long, we know that austerity doesn't work, and we know that quantitative easing doesn't work. Giving money to banks so that they can lodge it with the central bank is not the way to get the number of transactions rising, to get people out there and spending and starting businesses and buying and spending is the way to really start to get the velocity of money moving. And one of the reasons that we have been able to have such incredibly accommodative monetary policy is because the velocity of money has been declining. If velocity of money is going down, then Central Banking 101 quite simply states that we need to have more money in the system to ensure that there is enough of money or enough of capital to ensure the potential for growth. If, however, velocity of money starts to turn around, and so far there is no sign of that, this of course is a lagging indicator. It was last updated on the 30th of September, and it is then also with a one-quarter lag, and therefore we will see a change in the wider economy in terms of our daily lives much faster than it will turn up on this chart. But in the eventuality that velocity of money does eventually turn around, then that will be the catalyst for central banks to even begin to take seriously the issue of just how large their balance sheets are and how much money there is out there in the system, because that is what will create inflation. When we look at what the total assets of the Fed are, they are at $4.5 trillion, and they have gone nowhere for 4 years, which means, of course, that they're not adding new money, but they are reinvesting all bonds that are maturing. And this is a profoundly large quantity of money. Now, if they are reinvesting all of their maturing bonds, that of course means that the Treasury gets to gets the money that it requires. But if interest rates are rising, then the Treasury's overall cost of funding the national debt also rises. And when there is that quantity of bonds, the coupons that need to be paid, regardless of the fact that those coupons are being paid to the Fed, and the Fed then buys bonds back from the Treasury, so there is a recycling, then it necessitates that the quantity increases. And that all works fine if you have low interest rates and interest rates don't go anywhere for a long time. If in fact inflation picks up, and most particularly if the velocity of money picks up, then you get an inflationary problem. Because you have $4.5 trillion of debt that is sitting there, and that is that on which coupons have to be paid, and on which maturing bonds need to be reinvested, and then those bonds are being reinvested at even higher coupons. This is where we could have a potential problem if with inflation. That's when inflation could really take off. And if you're a big bull of gold, that is what you'd be looking for. Gold prices have been falling rather aggressively for the last 6 weeks. We're looking at the long-term chart, so we can see very clearly that very lengthy ranging phases give way to very big bull markets. That, and perhaps more importantly, is that when you've had one of the big bull markets, prices don't ever really go back down to where they were previously. That, of course, does not mean that they can't fall a long way from where the peak was. And the most recent peak in gold was in 2011. And it was just below $2,000. And prices haven't quite halved since then, but they have come back pretty significantly. $1,000 is a big psychological level, and the peak back in 1980 was at 850, which is quite a bit below $1,000. If this bear market between 2011 and late 2015 has in fact been broken, and that we are now in support building territory, then this very persistent decline over the last 6 weeks is not going to go to a new low, and that we are going to find support somewhere between here and the region of the 2015 low. And then we move back up. And whether then we get a move to new recovery highs, or we move into a lengthier ranging phase overall, is really the question that needs to be answered. But if we cast our minds back to that 50-year chart, we had a very big decline, and we had a big move on the upside. But prices didn't go below the low that were posted in 1982 on for nearly well, it wasn't quite 20 years, but it was really not that far off. And we have had this big move on the upside, and we are now getting this swift reaction. If the $1,000 area can hold, then perhaps we are going to move into another lengthy ranging phase for gold. And the really bullish case would be that we get a phase where it isn't just that you have declining mine productivity, but it is that inflation picks up and starts in rising much faster than interest rates. That is when people really begin to lose faith in fiat currency. We're just not there yet. Certainly, there is the potential that that could in fact happen, and it would most particularly happen if the velocity of money begins to pick up. And there is the potential, of course, that the velocity of money really could pick up. And of course, what is also really worth considering is that stocks are also a pretty good hedge against inflation, at least in nominal terms. So that is something that I think really does have to be borne in mind. But of course, inflation is really bad news for bonds. And we have had a 35-year bull market in bonds, and that could potentially now also be ending. Now, when and that yield curve chart has not loaded, so I'm going to skip that for the moment. when we look at the rest of the world, then I think, we do have to consider that the dollar had gone down for a very long time, and now the dollar is going up. And there are a lot of places benefited enormously from the weakness of the US dollar. Globalization really took off, from the early 2000s. And part of the reason that it took off is because companies had to go find other markets because there was a big recession after a massive bull market in the USA. And major companies like the autonomies spent massive amounts of money on expanding internationally. Some, of course, had been doing that for a long time already. But with the strength of the dollar, and the dollar is not just going up against the euro, it is going up against pretty much everything. And there are a lot of strategists talking about how fundamentally cheap emerging markets are. And I have a lot of sympathy with that, that if the US economy is doing better, then that is going to suck in money from all over the world, but it is also going to suck in imports. And if the US is importing, then everywhere else is exporting. And the decline in their respective currencies is going to give them a very clear competitive advantage. The more the currencies go down against the dollar, the greater the competitive advantage is likely to be when they eventually turn. But that is the argument, of course, for when they turn, and right now there is no evidence that they have turned, that the dollar is still trending higher and that Asian currencies are still trending lower. If that is the case, then fundamental value is likely to get even better. And of course, not all currencies go up at the same time or go down at the same time, and that varying emerging markets will be judged on their individual merits. And it really is about governance, because governance really is everything. What is perhaps most encouraging is that it is high population countries, right, mostly in the Asian region, have got the clearest examples of improving governance, and most particularly in India and in Indonesia. And I think it could be argued that China is increasingly pursuing a populist agenda and boosting the military and being more assertive in its international affairs is perhaps a feint overall to try and distract the local population from the rationalization that is going on, or indeed the fact that you can't see your hand in front of your face in Beijing at this time of the year. So there are certainly challenges, and perhaps most particularly hubris is if improving governance is something that has to be to watched for and encouraged, then hubris is something that is the very antithesis of that. And we have certainly seen hubris contribute to some two devastating wars in the Middle East. And there is the potential that China has had such incredible economic success that they overplay their hand. And I think that that is something that really does have to be watched out for. That if we had to think about one particular risk, it is that the renminbi doesn't just slide lower in a measured fashion, but that we get a one-step devaluation. I think that is an increasing risk. So, and if we were to think about one big black swan that is not really priced into markets, then that is a potential outcome for 2017. There is this moving estimation of just how large Chinese reserves are, and I've seen figures of 3.5 trillion to 3 trillion, but what we certainly know is that they are not increasing any longer, they are contracting. The CCI index has got a broadly similar pattern to gold in that it went through a very lengthy ranging phase, which gave way to a very large trending phase, and that now we have had a pretty impressive bounce this year. And the extent to which the index can find support in the region of the trend mean is going to be answered perhaps next week. Considering that we've had a pretty emphatic bullish surprise for commodities this year, and the vast majority of investors that I have seen are predicting that we're going to have a potential for a better year next year, then if we look at the continuous commodity index, well, we need to see some evidence that that is indeed the case, because they haven't gone anywhere for 6 months. The majority of the action has been in the industrial metals. So I think that is perhaps where I think most people are looking. But even with the industrial metals, a process of mean reversion is currently underway. I think that there is really ample potential that we are going to have a very big bull market over the next 20 years, but it is going to be punctuated by the occasional bear market. That the rise of the global consumer, the accelerating pace of technological innovation, and the fact that oil prices could range rather than trend for the prolonged medium term, all contribute to the potential for productivity to improve, and with productivity improving, you get the rationale for bull markets. The eventual normalization of interest rates is a potential challenge, but of course it would the most benign scenario is that interest rates improve, or that interest rates normalize, because economic growth is so strong. So it may not be the same kind of challenge that people have been worried about. What perhaps I am most keenly aware of at present is that Wall Street has been rallying very, very strongly, that the banking sector has just raced higher, and that President-elect Trump will not be inaugurated until January 20th. So we have had a lot of very good news priced in already, and there is the potential that people then take a breather and wait to see what is actually implemented. So we have short-term overbought conditions. The potential for a pullback in consolidation is increasing by the day, and next week is going to be particularly illiquid, where the majority of people are on vacation. So we have to certainly be aware that we could have a pullback next week, or potentially in the first few days of next year. And we know what that feels like, because we got exactly that this year, and we have also had pullbacks in the first 3 or 4 weeks of the year, and I think 3 or 4 of the last 5 years. So we really do have to be keenly aware of, particularly for leveraged traders, that there is the potential that for short-term overbought conditions to be unwound. So I think with that, I will leave you for today, and wish all the best to all of you, and most particularly a happy Christmas, and looking forward to a peaceful and prosperous New Year.